Radio.
Self-care and supervision, vital for the new evangelization. A presentation by Marcel Copa at the Proclaim 2016 conference. Brought to you by Cradio and XT3.
So I'm Marcel. What informs me and my sense of mission in the church is if I support the one person I'm looking after, then I'm supporting the hundreds they're reaching out to. But sometimes the work that one person needs is a lot, huh? And that's what I'll be talking about today. Not only through self-care, but regular, ongoing care. Yeah. And Sean will come in at the end. And
did you want to do a little 5-minute case study as part of Marcel's presentation?
So I'm going to start here at how important this line is: love your neighbour as yourself. And inherent in that is to love yourself. Yeah. How can you love your neighbour without loving yourself? And I think as carers and Christians, we're so good at looking after others, we're not very good at loving ourselves, yeah? We can be the best carer, but we may not have the time for ourselves. So for me, loving yourself is equally as important as loving others. And actually, the way you love yourself helps inform the way you love others. Does that make sense? Yeah. What do you guys like at looking at loving yourself? You good at it? No, gosh, no. Well, at least after today, you might think, gee, I better work on this. If I get there, that's great, you know. It's very important. Because we need laborers in the harvest. You know, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. So we need to look after these laborers in the harvest, don't we? And that's my sense is that's you here, or, you know, people you know. But how do you remain in there? I've just seen too many people get tired, leave ministry, act out, burn out. You know, we need the labourers. And it's not just, you know, we need labourers. Come on, everyone, join the army. And, you know, like the army, people can be quite dispensable. You know, in the life of the church, we don't want that. We want people to hang around. We want people to thrive and grow in ministry, don't we? Yeah? Because you're important and your work is important. The work of evangelization in all its forms in the church is extremely important. We want people to have a long, fruitful ministry life. I mean, that's my hope anyway, and that's what I'm sure you do. Have you seen many people just come and go in ministry, you know? You know, I'm giving you faces here, but, you know, this man involved in pastoral care, youth ministry, another youth minister, priest, coordinates pastoral care across parishes, does work in cross-cultural groups in churches. But the sad point is that none of those people are in ministry anymore. They're gone. Where are they? What happened? Why? You've seen it. You've seen them. I've seen them. You know, well, they were good at it. You know, you've seen some people, they were good at it. They loved their job in the ministry. They had talent right from the word go. I remember when I first came into ministry settings, they just threw me, you'd be good at work with young people. And they threw me in there really quickly. And I think we do that. We grab anyone with a bit of talent because we need them in the church, huh? They love God and going to church. They were very good at helping others. They were called by God. They were inspiring. You know, you've heard all inspiring talkers and speakers in the life of the church, and they were able to spiritually nourish and encourage others. So what happened? Why did they leave? You know, the saddest thing for me in my work, and I think it really informs why I do what I do, my sense of mission in the church, is when people leave, not only leave their ministry, they leave the church. They leave the faith. Have you seen that? People are just so tired and burnt out. The baby is thrown out with the bathwater. Sad. You know, that's the last thing we need, you know. And if we're the face of the church, you know, we're trying to be inspiring, happy people. It's not going to be very easy if we're really, if we don't have these things, you know. Why would these people leave? Lack of support and support network, a lack of self-care, a lack of accountability, prayer life, no prayer life going, work-life balance out of whack. They don't have proper supervision. They've got relationship isolation. They do their work, but they're doing it alone. They need help with sleep, eating, exercise and socialising. They're burnt out. They have accumulated stress and tiredness. But sadly, it's the poor or bad decisions if all of this is going. And I'll explain why we make poor or bad decisions when we have accumulated stress. Is this resonating with anyone? Does yes? You'll know people down there. Sorry. Okay. God calls us to come to Him and when we're tired and weary. Because His yoke is easy and burden is light, but we're running around crazily, trying to get everything done. We're tired, run down, you know. Doesn't feel very light. I mean, even Jesus said to His apostles, come aside for a while. He pulled them aside for a while. They needed to rest and get away from the crowds. You'll see references to that. We can't just keep doing what we're doing. So if you think about it from this example, you know, what empties your bucket? Emotional demands. You know, this is the, what we, when we're working with people, this is what we're giving out. We've got responsibilities, worries, deadlines. You know, poor nutrition, exercise gets challenged. We might just get sick all of a sudden, or we're sick because we're tired. And we've got to do everything. It's too, even just the effort we have to put in is too hard. This is what we're giving out, yeah? But what are we taking in? So, you know, this is what's going out. If you think about what's going out and what's coming in, there's quite an imbalance at the best of times for all of us, I think. Who's good at this, you know, that they feel as though, oh, well, look, there's even a, we might even have a balance. You know, nice bit of self-care, rest, prayer, relaxation, stimulation, good supportive relationships, fun on the weekends, retreats, prayer days. Is this how it is for you? You get nice balance? Yeah, you got it all going? Do you remember Jean-Paul Sartre, the existentialist? He wrote a book called Hell is Other People. Yeah. By all accounts, he was a very anxious man. You know, and there's people that would counteract his thesis, don't worry. But what he had to say is that contact with others impacts our emotional energy. It does, just does alone. And I'm actually an introvert, so I can put on all my extroverted skills today. So the extra emotional energy it is for me to even deliver this talk, I'm aware of. I'll be okay, don't worry. I'll practice my self-care afterwards. But imagine when you've got the added ingredient of dealing with stressful people or situations. Because there's no difficult or stressful people in church life, are there? Everyone's nice. No difficult personalities. No, everyone's loving and kind. Come on, we're Christians, aren't we? But, you know, and you've definitely come across mean or intentionally, unintentionally hurtful people, haven't you? Yeah? I did work for 3 years in the Uniting Church in the unit that responded to sexual abuse. But a lot of the complaints that came in were about bullying and people that just used power and control in a really bad way. And the impact that it had on the victim, on people that were recipients of the bullying, and it included the ministers as well as the parishioners. So just to think of the impact of all this accumulates, yeah? Some of this stress we don't even know we're aware of. You talk to other people, everyone, you're having a nice chat. Then afterwards you walk away and go, gee, I'm tired. And you don't even know why. Sometimes it's just your contact with other people. All right, so I've got this diagram up here If we're going to be caring for other people and doing this work, if you think of this as an onion ring, right? And in the middle, at A, you need someone in your journey who you can trust, open up to, and they care for you. And it's, you know, it can be nice and reciprocal, but you are close to, and it's the one that you might let out everything to. Yeah? Put your hands up if you've got that person, you know? Yeah? And it doesn't have to be your partner. And please don't say that's God. Because it might be. But, you know, I'm talking about a human that's, you know, around you. Yeah. Doesn't necessarily even have to be face-to-face. Could be Skype or phone. But a person you know you can go to and you can just, all guards are down and they get you, yeah? We need this. They're hard to find. I reckon you're lucky if you get, count them on one hand. I don't think I've had many in my whole life. But the people out, yeah?
Yeah, I want to interrupt you personally. You used Jean Paul Sartre. Why did you use an un-Christian quote? That's just one thing. You can tell me that later. When you say God, every good person I have met, I've asked first God for guidance, and I've always met them in a church. And the latest one I've got, which has been with me for 3 years, was met actually at Chatswood. And I had requested that God would put someone in my path for consolation. He responded very quickly.
Good.
So my thought is, don't underestimate the power of speaking to God.
Yeah, but God sent you a person. So that was good. Yeah, and you needed that person. Yeah. So on the outside here, right, these are the people that it could be in your church settings or in your life that it's, hello, how you going? Yeah, not bad, yourself. And, you know, footy was good on the weekend and there's nothing more than that. You choose where they are, yeah? You can think of, some of your family members might be there, huh? You think, oh, yeah, that's all I do with that, my sister, because she just takes all the energy out of me. She wants to know everything about me, but it's all about her. Yeah? We choose how we relate to people. And this lady here might be, hey, g'day, how's it going? Yeah, pretty good. Oh, actually, not so good. I had a hard day. It was really difficult. But you don't really delve that much further into it, yeah? Now, we need all of these people. But you choose where they are. Some people want to go from here straight away down there. You know, you meet them and they're friendly and all that, and it's in a church setting. And they, you know, they might open up really deeply to you. And you say, whoa, I don't know if I want that. And each time it's a conversation that feels as though they want you to push you there, but you don't trust them. Yeah? Does that resonate for people? So I love my elder sister. I'm the youngest of five. But she's what I call a social vampire. You know, and each time I'm with her, she just sucks the energy out of me because the whole conversation is about her and her daughter and their holidays. And so what I do is I give her 15 minutes and then I say, oh, look, I've just got to get a cup of tea, you know. It's a way I can love her still, but spending too long, it's too difficult. Yeah. Good. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And, you know, and it's hard, isn't it? Difficult with family members because you feel as though, oh, they're my family, I should give them something because they're family. Yeah, yeah. But that's why I'm trying, you know, if you think about it, it's about what you've got to try and draw that, you know. And even with the priest in your parish or somebody, you know, in your ministry setting, you choose. You choose a relationship. They might open up to you, but you choose how you relate to them, you know. Look, we all need stress, don't we? That if you've got two little stress going on, boredom, too much, exhaustion, yeah? It's a known fact. We all need some level of stress to be stimulated. But stress impacts four areas in all of us. Sleeping, eating. I'm a comfort eater from way back. Anyone? But it's horrible when you're so stressed you stop eating, yeah? You must eat when that goes on. It's the quickest diet ever, isn't it, you know? You lose your desire to exercise and your desire to socialise. We draw in, but if you are not sleeping and not eating, and not exercising and not talking to anyone, you know, it's like a slide. You're going to go further inside yourself, yeah? So, but what happens with accumulated stress? there's an alarm that goes off in the brain. You know, you might have heard of fight, flight, freeze, but I use the alarm analogy. So adrenaline's released, cortisol's released, and we're on. We perceive everything as a threat. Our survival's at risk. But what happens in the back of the brain is that the logical, consequential thinking starts getting blocked out. Physiologically, it does. And that's when we make bad choices. We look for comfort, and sometimes comfort in the wrong areas. Some of these people I have met in ministry settings are so stressed, they are just thinking about, finding another partner with someone else, suddenly leaving their family because that's what they need to do. It's sad, they will leave the church because it's too much. Yeah. Have any of you ever had rumination where you can't stop thinking about things, and you go round and round, and you try and think about it, and you can't snap out of it? How do you manage that? How do you guys go with that? What do you do to stop ruminating? Oh, stop thinking about it. Sorry? Bottle of wine, yes. Hopefully not one in each hand, I'm worried about people who run around like this, If you think about your energy levels, they're constantly running on empty. I see these people in parish settings, ministry settings all the time. And they get a little bit of energy, they have a good weekend, and they think, oh, I've got a bit of energy, then they burn it off again real quick. Wouldn't it be good to see people at this end, yeah? And each time you get near to half, then you fill up. You don't let it go past half. There's no point in that. Right? Is that the way you operate? Yeah? You're all got great amounts of energy?
Some reserve there as well.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's always reserve. There's always reserve. I'm just going to give a little...
G'day, my name's Peter. I work in the ministry in the Catholic Church. I've found that over the past 3 years in my role, it's been really, really important for me to practice self-care in my own work, in my own life, to have a good balance and realistic expectations in my life and the right kind of support. I've found that the times when I'm not taking care of myself, I don't have the right support in my life. I seek out the wrong support. I don't have a good balance between work and life and friends and social life. And I've been known that it was very easy for me to lose focus on what I was doing, to lose focus in my role and even at times it was actually lose focus in God. But I've been known that in practicing mental priority, self-care and looking after myself, I've actually been able to give more generously in my work, give more generously to others, enjoy my work, which is really important, and all around feel like I'm making a difference within the white church.
Thanks, Pete. That wasn't scripted, by the way. So if you think about our... we've all got a certain amount of resilience, right? Resilience, they talk about, it's the ability to bungee jump through life. Yeah, we bounce back from adverse times. You know, if we stretch and stretch, have a lot of work on and get a lot of stressful paper, we think, whoa, can't wait for the weekend, glass of wine. And then we think, it's good, I'm all right again. But if you stretch and stretch and stretch and it's just beyond anything, you think, oh, I need a holiday. You go on your 3-week holiday, you come back, oh, you're good. But if you stretch and you stretch and you stretch, what's going to happen? Yeah, snap, breakdown. You've seen that, I'm sure. But the other part that's more insidious is burnout. You know, when a person goes to recover and look after themselves, it just doesn't come back and it's like this. And I've seen too many people like that. I worked with a priest in burnout. It took him about 3 or 4 years to recover. Yeah. In one respect, a breakdown, some people recover from breakdowns in a few months. So sadly, burnout's really quite insidious. You lose your sense of compassion is one of the real signs, pervasive tiredness. constant sense of stuckness. You just feel ineffective, anxiety. I have a burnout inventory, but I won't get you to do it. But you should try burnout inventories. Each time I do workshops and I hand them out, and I get people to say, oh, who's got something that they're concerned about? I usually get about a 60% response of, oh dear, I'm at risk myself. Yeah. I reckon common symptoms is tuning out, just lots of tuning out. You're never tuning in. Yeah. Alcohol is an issue. It can be, sorry. You become irritable, oversensitive, reactive, not laughing. It was always my gift, I think, was to be able to laugh and make light of things. Once I lose that, I start working on myself. But I have been in burnout, and I just found I was one cranky person. And I know when I recovered, because I had to put a lot into place, had to change jobs, do a lot of things. I worked with people. You know that feeling of, I worked with someone and I loved them. I felt love and compassion in my heart for them. Oh, I actually experienced that. It's amazing what you can do robotic-like in caring for others. You can nod and do all the right things and they'll feel really cared for, but inside yourself you're going, oh my gosh, I'm so tired, you know? So why is self-care important? So remove from a place of love and giving rather than the job or automatic pilot. To honour ourselves in the work we do. To avoid burnout. And when we've got accumulated stress, you know, just think you've got a whole lot of stressful things on at once, and, you know, there's sickness at home and there's, you know, work demands and mean people and all that all at once. The only way for that alarm to calm down and for the adrenaline and the cortisol to turn off is self-care. I say this every week. In my job, I do critical incident debriefing after a major incident. And I have to tell people how to get that alarm calmed down. You know, so pull aside, overdo the things that you need to do to look after yourself. Yeah? It is the ingredient. So what about this sort of self-care? Regular timeouts. Have you guys got this going in your life? Gardening?
Yes.
Exercise? Go out for dinners? Movies? Fun outings? Is that all part of your life? Mindful walks, you know, just walking around, noticing the nature. The bad weather outside, no. Celebrating good days and interactions. Talk to trusted others and maybe even form a group. What do you people do for your self-care? I love mountain biking, for example. If people could only self-reflect and each day do an Ignatian examine and just, you know, focus on the good movements and the not so good movements, but they can focus on how they're travelling and what's going on, you know. I was reactive today a lot. I was irritable today a lot. Why? What are you going to do to adjust? But we need planned self-care. This is the stuff locked in that is non-negotiable. Holidays, outings, retreats, prayer days. Going to events, seeing Australia play, you know, someone in the soccer. You know what happens, I think? Well, if they're stressful, it's terrible. But you know what happens? I think these are the things that get, well, don't worry about it. I can't make that prayer day because I'll get more work done. And, I'm too tired to go out now. I might give my ticket away. Sorry, you were saying something. The Ignatian examine. Being aware of the movement within us. Mindfully attending to ourselves. Yeah. Spend some time each day reflecting on the day. So important. I don't think a lot of people do this. And I think if you've got a whole lot of stress, the last thing you want to do is keep thinking about the stress. Hey, sometimes we need counselling. That's okay. I go for bouts of therapy. It's not just about referral for someone else. Sometimes it's the referral for yourself. You know, you can go to a doctor now, get a mental health care plan, get 10 free or subsidised sessions. It's so easy to do. I do a lot of phone counselling for people now. Don't go to counselling when you're down and out. You might go a bit early and think, oh, I just need to make sense of that. Something went off inside of me when that happened. So self-care is not selfish or self-indulgent, you know, because I think it challenges this walk the extra mile, carry our cross. God loves a generous giver, our Christian and Catholic upbringing. It challenges it, but it's not careless self-indulgence. We need it to look after ourselves, to be able to give from a good place. And it's not just self-focus for the sake of it. You'll know a person is just constantly self-absorbed. It's different. You actually need to have a bit more of a balance of it. So it's about the self-love. Just give you a...
I've just finished 5 years as parish president of Suburban Parish. You know, this support was vital for my well-being throughout that period. I suppose supervision is going to mean different things for different people, but for me, probably the main issue would always be being able to care for myself properly in the midst of just the constant pressure and seemingly endless demands to be caring for other people. I have to acknowledge, of course, that an awful lot of that pressure comes from inside me, this sort of drivenness to be working all the time, to be constantly caring for other people rather than for myself. But time and time again, over and over, I'd come away from sessions reassured and calmed and strengthened and affirmed and just really encouraged to make the decisions that I need to make so that I'm not just surviving but living really well and being.
Good. That wasn't scripted either. I'm not saying, hey, read this. That's somebody's personal, a priest's personal story, yeah? So why and what is ministry supervision? So it's having, you've heard of this concept before, ministry supervision, yeah? It's not mentoring, it's someone outside your situation to provide support, you know? It's a place of having some accountability, another set of eyes on what you do, because we, even me in private practice, no one knows what I do unless I go to someone and talk about it, and they can get, I can get another set of eyes on it. It's some accountability. They help you develop strategies to handle difficult situations and people. Have a place to offload and debrief. Explore our work-life balance. Gain insight into others and self about your work or, you know, ministry situation. Have someone barrack for you saying, hey, you did that really well, that's fantastic. Do you ever get that? Do people sort of, you know, say, hey, you did, that's fantastic, well done. Are you getting those pats on the shoulder? It's hard to get them, isn't it, sometimes. So why supervision? I mean, think about it. Have you got a place to take the more difficult, pointy end matters? You're working with someone and there is the attraction going on. And there's no, and you're not, you've got nowhere to take it. They help you connect between theory and practice, and sometimes even your, what I call operating theology and your practice. To help you with boundaries. You know, that slide I put up before is just the start of how difficult people find boundaries. I know Father Michael Smith, he's a Jesuit in Melbourne, and this is what he says in relation to the Royal Commission. He goes, I wonder what it would look like if more people and priests had supervision. Classic Jesuit way of saying, you know, just offering that out there. You know, I can see a lot in that. But it's an external person who provides informed care. They've got training and experience, the supervisor. People need help with self-care. Not a lot of us are very good at it. And help with difficult people, because they are everywhere. They are. They are. All right, so what it isn't. It's not someone having supervision, you know, they see right into you, or, you know, they know the best way to operate. And it's not just talking to someone over coffee, with someone who's a bit more experienced. It's not a place to nitpick about what you've done wrong in your role. And it's not spiritual direction. Spirit directors are specifically trained in spiritual direction. I'm not. I've done a lot of spirituality, but I will not offer spiritual direction because that's what it's about. And it's not counselling. But you may do some work in exploring yourself. So I'm just going to hand it over to Sean. He's going to talk about a systemic approach to supervision.
Thanks, Marcel. So my name's Sean. Marcel and I have actually known each other for... many years, since grade one, and it's funny to be here sharing this little workshop. I just want to speak for a little bit about my experience of implementing a systemic approach to supervision. So what my background with supervision was that I've been involved in ministry, in the church, and then got into social work, counselling, family therapy, and community development in different ways, men's health and wellbeing, and suicide prevention. And so in that context, counsellors, psychologists, all got supervision. So that's how I knew about it and understood it. And as a counsellor, I went and had my own external clinical supervision, and it was very, very important. Then in 1996, Archbishop Mark Coleridge came to Canberra Goulburn as the new Archbishop, and I got a job there as Director of Pastoral Support. And it was a very exciting start of 9 years of building and developing a new pastoral team in the Archdiocese there. And we went from 4 staff to around about 40 staff. And at that time, we had concerns when I started because there'd been some ethical practice failures on some in the lives of some of the previous pastoral workers in the life of the diocese. So maybe in the parish level or at the archdiocesan level, we'd had some problems. And so there was a concern to make sure we had more of a professional support given to people employed in lay ministry roles. And then here I was in charge of this growing team, which grew, and it was very exciting. But the big concern was, how do we make sure that this is supported? So I was very lucky that I had the authority to put in place what I think was actually a pretty innovative approach, where we had a policy where every staff member got, if you're involved in ministry, even if you're part-time, you had to have monthly supervision with an external supervisor. So we built that into the budgets, and luckily I had the authority to kind of set that up and set the budgets. But there had to be some arguments with people in the organisation, in the Archdiocese, to make that happen. And we ended up with an integrated and funded supervision program. And just a couple of observations from that experience was that it really helped us attract quality employees, quality people into the diocese. People we may not have had before, because they could see, I'll risk myself, I'll come and I'll take on this employment of this difficult job, but I can see that they give supervision and it's locked in and it's actually part of the position description and it's part of the contract. And so it drew people to us. It also, as the years went by, it helped us keep people. And that churn that can happen in a difficult role, it helped us retain our talent. So that was another really important aspect. Importantly, it gave us accountability, and I saw people in difficult roles. There's a difficult cultural context if you're employed in ministry in the Catholic Church. It's not like being employed in other organisations. It is arguably way more complex, way more difficult, way more high risk. And I think that because you have a spiritual authority in people's lives as a minister, lay minister, let alone clergy or religious, the onus on you to have that external support and accountability in your life is actually greater than it would be for a psychologist, because you have more power than they do in people's lives, and it can be abused and misused. So that was really important to ensure that. The other thing is, if the organisation is not looking after its staff right, looking after its people in the right way, ensuring that accountability, how can it then go out and preach the gospel authentically? So the degree to which we support our staff properly is the degree to which we can actually do proper evangelization. That was, from an organisational perspective, that was important. But I want to make a point now, because I'm out of that role now, and I'm now working for a community organisation as the Director of Conflict Resolution Service. So conflict is our thing. And I've thought a lot about conflict in faith-based organisations. And this is a point I want to make, because there is a way in which conflict works itself out in the church, which is unique. And I want to play a little clip that emphasises this point at the moment, and we can have a discussion. But as we watch this, just have a think about your experience of conflict in the life of the church, parish, whatever.
Conflict is necessary. Now, many leaders I talk to, many CEOs I work with will say, and by the way, most of them have very little conflict. There's far less conflict in almost every organization than there needs to be. And I'll say to them, why don't you engage conflict more? They say, well, because I don't want to see people get their feelings hurt. Which is interesting and ironic, because you know what kind of organizations people get their feelings hurt in the worst? Of all the kind of organizations in society, Where is there the worst kind of hurtful back-channel conflict? You can say it all together. One, two, three. Church. That's right. Now, I like to have fun with that when I'm working with a secular audience, because I tell them that as well. And I say, and I work in my local church, and I've come to realize why churches have such bad conflict. It's because they hire mean people. And they're always like, really? Where do you go to church? And I'm like, no, it's not that. In fact, it's the opposite. We go to church. I'm Catholic. We have a parish council meeting, which is a group of volunteers. And we'll sit down around a table to solve problems, and some very nice lady will say, I think we should have a festival of balloons next week or something. And I'm thinking, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But I don't say that to her because I'm Christian. I say, oh, great, I can thank you for that. Good, okay, anybody else? Great. Great meeting, everybody. Thank you. Then I go out in the parking lot with my friend and I say, I think she's an idiot, don't you? And then meeting after meeting we go to, we never disagree, we start to roll our eyes whenever she speaks, we sigh, and finally one of her friends tells her that someone thinks she's an idiot. Now we've crushed her spirit. But at least we didn't disagree with her idea. Ladies and gentlemen,
so you get the point that I'm trying to make there, that there's a cultural context of employment in the church that actually is high risk. And when you're in it, I've done a lot of thinking about this, but so the importance of if you're in ministry, in employment in the church, if you're the importance of having that external forum where you can go and debrief in complete professional independence from your workplace, in your ministry context, what is going on here? Incredibly important. And I'd always particularly make sure our youth ministry people had supervision, and I'd make sure they got it every month if they weren't following up on it, because they don't have maybe the maturity, they haven't been in the workplace long enough. And all of this, what was described here, can be going on around them, and they need that external venue, forum in which to sort of understand it better.
What does that look like in terms of when you are doing that supervision for someone who needs that as a supervisor of that?
So one of the things is, well, with supervision is that it's a particular, Marcel can probably speak to this too, but you need to be trained as a supervisor. We were very lucky because we had, local Salvation Army had a counselling unit and had all these trained supervisors there. So we were able to send all our staff there, $110 a session, 12 sessions a year per staff member, full time. And they just go there and they can debrief and understand what is happening for me personally, in the workplace. So then they come back, and it really helped us with things like triangulation. So again, in the workplace, conflict, in the church, when the stress comes on, Marcel was talking a lot about that, what can happen is an unhelpful communication where instead of me dealing with this issue I've got with this colleague properly and in an upfront way, I'm going to go around over here, I'm going to speak to this colleague over here, because then maybe they'll speak to that person there and I'll get what I want. So it's a manipulative form of communication, destructive, sometimes called gossip, but very destructive. So, but supervision is a way of managing that temptation. Role confusion is the other one that the supervision can really help with, helping people realise, oh, I'm a friend to this person I'm ministering to, but I'm also their boss. How do I manage that? Am I manipulating my dual roles I have in that person's life to get what I want, actually? So I think it has that counselling elements to it, but it is very much focused on your workplace and your role and personally, and that interplay between theory and practice. You know, I'm doing all this stuff at work, and this is a forum where you can think, well, why am I reacting that way at work, and why am I doing that? I thought I was doing it for this reason, but actually I'm attracted to this person or something, and you can get those insights and you can realise you're favouring someone or whatever it might be, any number of issues. So through supervision you can get those insights and you can become more integrated as a minister.
So thank you for coming and hearing me. Yeah.
That was Marcel Koper with Self-Care and Supervision, Vital for the New Evangelization. This presentation was part of the Proclaim 2016 conference on the theme On a Mission of Mercy, Evangelizing Parishes, which was hosted by Broken Bay Diocese Australia. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit creatio.org.au.